DeRozan to win it. No! DeMar DeRozan delivers.
Anderson hits it in the air.
What is going on, everybody? This is Mike Hughes, and you're listening to Mike on the Mic, everything Chicago sports-related podcast. We are back today with another episode, but instead of just listening to my ugly mug, we have someone that everybody knows and loves. He's becoming a Chicago legend right there before us. Super excited to have him on. Matt Mash Mervis is joining the show today. Matt, how are you today? How's everything going?
I'm doing well, Mike. Thanks for having me.
Man, you know, we've been in a very, very lackluster season for the Chicago Cubs right now, and there's not a lot of things to talk about. I was just talking with Patrick Wisdom about it the other day. He just hit number 25. He's super excited about it. And, you know, right now, a big thing for Cubs fans is just getting to know the rookies. And that's something we always say. That's something we always pride ourselves on, is really just building a great farm system. And you, out of the dark, and we've had this conversation backstage, and we've had this conversation other times, is, you know, really understanding that everything that could have went right for you this season went right. And I've heard you talk about it on other shows before, but really just getting into it. Before we get into anything Chicago Cubs related, we got to talk about Matt Mervis himself, because I'm tired of hearing about Mash. I see Mash every day. I want to hear about Matt. For you, I know, born in Washington, D.C., it's a very different kind of city. It's kind of just like Chicago. You know, you go too far this way and it's nothing but little communities and suburbs, and you go too far this way and you can find the city. For you, what was it like growing up in Washington, and what's that really like?
So, you know, we did those field trips down to D.C., and I kind of experienced some of the bigger city D.C. life once in a while. But, I lived in Maryland growing up, and, I loved it. It's a really nice area. You can go downtown and go see Georgetown and go shopping, or, there's Annapolis is the Maryland state capital, about an hour away on the Chesapeake Bay. So there's kind of a bunch of different lifestyles all within an hour, and it was a lot of fun. But DC itself is pretty special to me.
Now, out in Maryland, you know, baseball for me, you know, personally, you know, growing up in Chicago, it's about 4 months out of the year, and then the other eight you're stuck in your house. So for you in Maryland, and obviously you probably travel ball around DC and just Washington as a whole, what was that like? What was playing travel ball there like, high school ball, etc.? What was your experience like playing ball there?
Growing up, it was fun. The first travel ball league I played in was pretty good, actually. We played against teams from, probably up to an hour away, all within one league. So, you know, it was a lot of driving growing up when you're 8, 9, 10 years old. And then once I got to the bigger field and started getting serious about, you know, maybe college or professional baseball, then I actually had to go. I started playing for a team in Richmond and then a team in New Jersey, just because, honestly, Maryland baseball is not that great in that area. So, it's competitive up to a certain point, and then once you reach a certain level, you got to kind of expand a little bit. So, I played for Tri-State Arsenal, was the organization up in New Jersey, and just started traveling up there a little bit more. And then obviously the bigger tournaments down in Georgia and Florida.
Obviously, you know, there's a lot of different points to where you can sit here and say that you knew, like you said, you know, you're going to start taking this a lot more seriously. It's going to be a professional career, not just you meeting up with your buddies on a Sunday night and playing some catch. But for you, what was the moment? You know, obviously, you're 6'4", you're a big guy, and in high school, you know, I know there's a lot of moments for people. Sometimes it's very early on. Sometimes you're 14 years old, 250, 6'4". I've seen guys like that. But then sometimes it comes on later on. For you, what was that moment where you said, you know, I think I can do this at a professional level?
That's a good question. I don't exactly remember when. I think it was probably sometime after my freshman year of high school, like that summer circuit going into sophomore year where I started getting some real college interest. Growing up with my local Maryland team, I think I remember saying to one of my buddies, like, there's nobody on this team that's going to play professional baseball. Right. Just because we would play against teams from other states and they were just better than us. Top to bottom, I didn't think that our team could compete with some of them. So until I played for those New Jersey teams and started playing a more national showcase schedule, I guess that's when I started to realize it. So, 14, 15 years old, I was thinking more about college at that time. And then maybe throughout high school, I started to realize, like, you know, maybe this is a real possibility for me to play professionally.
100%. And, you know, you look at that and like you said, you're looking at all these offers, you're looking at everybody, you know, they look at everybody like a dollar sign. How are they going to be able to market themselves the best? So for you, you know, being a kid at that time, why Duke University and what really drew you towards there?
Duke was just the right combination of pretty much every factor I was considering. I wanted a good education to, if I'm going to go play college baseball, I'm going to take advantage of the college experience. So, education won. Baseball, obviously, the Duke program wasn't great before I got there, but they brought in a new head coach, I think, 2 or 3 years before I got there, and he'd done a great job turning around the previous programs he was at, so I was confident in what he would be able to do with Duke. It's only 4 hours from home, so my parents could come see me. I could go home for holidays, stuff like that, and I just liked the feel of the campus and everything that it had, so those four things, I just... I accepted that offer pretty quick.
100%. And, you know, you look at, you know, the intangibles of what are going on right now. And everybody's calling you Mash Mervis. Everybody's looking at the 30-plus home runs, over 115 RBIs. And we're definitely going to get into that in a little bit. But your time at Duke was a lot different than your time in Chicago so far. Or Iowa and Tennessee, I should say, in South Bend. But, you know, when you look at that, I was looking at your stats, and I was watching a lot of highlights, and I'm like, this kid hits for average. Like, this kid's for real. He's the real deal. For you, and I know I've heard you say in other times, you always knew you were a power hitter. You always knew you could smack it to the gate. But at the end of the day, when you look at your time at Duke, you know, you really just being able to transform your game the way you did. What was the difference between heading into the pros versus Duke when you're just looking at the approach?
I think it has to do with the number of at-bats I've gotten. My first 2 years at Duke, I barely hit. I think I had maybe 10, 12 plate appearances. And I would play well in summer ball. I think after my sophomore year, I had a good summer ball season and just got a ton of at-bats and then went back for my junior year in college and didn't start in the infield again. So, once I get into a rhythm and see a bunch of at-bats every day or a bunch of pitches every day, then I'm able to make adjustments and things flow a little bit better for me. So, obviously last year I struggled in Myrtle Beach. I think that was just a bigger adjustment jumping into pro ball where you play 6 days in a row and don't practice, whereas in college, you know, you play three in a row and then you have a day off and practice for a day or two and get back into a game so you can really feel your swing and adjust. And so I had to learn this year after struggling last year to make those adjustments. But, yeah, like I said, just frequently getting at-bats and seeing pitches.
Without a doubt.
It's helping a lot, keep my swing consistent.
Without a doubt. And, you know, we kind of brushed past it a little bit earlier. I said we weren't going to spend too much time on it because I know everybody, it's to each their own. You know, some guys, you know, they get drafted early on. Like in 2016, you got drafted by the Washington Nationals, you know, round 39. It was pick what? 1,174, something crazy like that. But there's a lot of different reasons guys decline. There's a lot of different reasons, you know, things don't pan out. But for you, was it more so, hey, I don't think I'm a 30 or 39 round pick Or is it because I want to finish my education at Duke and I really want to see, you know, as a backup plan? I've heard a lot of guys say they want to get that degree so that they always have something in their back pocket. For you, what went into that?
It was both. I was obviously really, really excited to be drafted and thankful to the Nationals for drafting me out of high school. But, 39th round out of high school, when I have the opportunity to go get a Duke education and a Duke degree, it wouldn't have made any sense financially. I don't even know what the signing bonus would have been. I don't think they offered me one over the phone. It was almost more of a congratulatory pick rather than an actual, we're going to try to sign you draft pick. I think I was, once I got past the first few rounds and the life-changing money had passed, then I was pretty set on going to college and, like you say, getting that degree for a backup plan and hopefully not having to use it. But, once I got to college, that was the plan.
Now, let me ask you this, and I know it's kind of, putting you on the spot, putting you on blast right now. Matt Mervis, if it all ended today, what's the plan? What would you be doing right now if you're not playing baseball?
Oh, man.
You're going to tell me you went 4 years and you can't tell me what you're doing?
I thought I was going to be a big leaguer since sophomore in high school. So I've never really considered a job or career path I want. If I had to give you an answer, I'd be a coach, probably.
That's the right answer. That's the right answer right there.
I mean, I want front office, if I have enough playing experience, stuff like that. I want to stay in baseball. I don't want to work a real job.
100%. That's honestly, that's my favorite answer so far. We've had a bunch of different ones. We had somebody, I'm not going to put anybody on blast, but we had somebody who said they would just rather just be a kitchen chef at a McDonald's or something. And I was like, what are we talking about here? What are we talking about here? But getting right into it, you kind of led to it, talking about Myrtle Beach, talking about Iowa, and really what went into that. You know, you're batting .208 in 2021, and obviously, a .310 OBP, 70 Ks, 9 home runs, 44 RBIs, 37 walks, and 72 games. And like you said, you finally got your moment to really just be yourself. You had over 250 at-bats. When you look at your first year as a whole, obviously the COVID year is something of itself, so I don't even address it because everything was different for everybody. There were side A's, there were side B's, C's, D's. I had no idea where anybody was. But when you look at it from your perspective, your first real season with the Cubs, how would you say, you felt in your footing and how comfortable you were versus how you did in the in Duke University?
I wasn't really comfortable. Like I mentioned earlier, the schedule threw me off a little bit. So,
right.
I started off okay last year and started to not feel great in the batter's box a couple weeks in. And I really didn't know how to adjust at that point. So I got really mechanical with my swing. And obviously when you're facing higher level pitching than college, that you're going to struggle. So, I could never really get out of my own way last year. And so, I consider last year a fluke. Some people are saying, this year may be a fluke and I got to prove it again over a longer period of time. I'd say it's the opposite.
Right.
I think last year was not indicative of the player I am, and this is more realistic. And this is what I expect out of myself. So, 2021 was a good learning experience. Obviously, I had to make a lot of adjustments in how I approach my day-to-day and my swing itself and stuff like that. But, I think last year was not an accurate representation of who I am.
I think that's the coldest answer I've heard so far. I think it really is, because you're really just betting on yourself and you're letting people know, this is who I am. Last year was what it was. But if that's what you're going to bet on me being the rest of my life, then you're going to bet wrong. And I think, right now what you're doing and the intangibles of what you're doing is just not only building off of who you once were, but you're changing it in a perspective of, okay, now I am Mash Mervis. Like, I am getting the at-bats to be able to hit home runs. And that's kind of, the point you were making earlier is, you didn't hit the at-bats to be able to hit home home runs. Not a lot of people understand that. It goes, you know, let's say even Aaron Judge right now, chasing 61, chasing Maris. There's over 162 games. So over 100 of those games, or even more potentially, you know, you're looking at guys who aren't hitting home runs. So it's a lot harder than a lot of people think. But for you, going into 2022, you kind of set a chip on your shoulder knowing that 2021 wasn't a solid year. And obviously, I know now you have that mentality. You have that dog in you that understands you are him. But when you look at it for what it is, going into this year, you know, there were no projections. There were no top 10 pick. You know, there were no, you know, he's top 10 in the pipeline, whoop-de-whoop, one of the best first basemen in the farm system. The pressure came very quickly. And it's not to say that you had pressure on you, but it definitely was felt to some degree. So for you, when did you really start feeling that change and that shift of, okay, now people in Chicago are starting to talk to me. Dave Kaplan is starting to talk about me. When did that start to change for you?
Probably a couple weeks into this season. I didn't start off all that hot this year. It took me, I think, until like the third week of the season, maybe, to hit my first home run. Mm-hmm. So I don't know, 10, 15 games in, but, you know, once I hit the first one, I kind of settled down a little bit, and it was different than last year. Like, I hit my first home run, and I was like, I hope I hit another one soon. And this year, it was like, I hit my first one, and then I hit another one that game. And I was like, all right, here we go. Like, it's time to turn it on, because, like I said, I started slow. And I think recently, Jared Banner, he's our farm director, said in an article, like, I told him in a preseason meeting, like, I want to start in Double-A. I'm ready to start in Double-A, and I want to head there. And obviously that didn't happen. So I wanted to play myself into Double-A as quickly as I could. And so once I hit the first home run and started swinging a little better, then that was time to turn it on.
100%. And, you know, I looked at, you know, the St. Paul game. I was actually watching that one live, and I saw the walk-off with that, and it was absolutely insane. The atmosphere was insane. The fan bases are back, especially, you know, and I know, you know, it's a little bit earlier on we're talking about this, but South Bend right now is going insane with all the division championships. And I was just talking to Cole Franklin about it. They're going crazy. They're going nuts. And I'm super happy for them. But you playing 27 games there to start the season, 100 at-bats, like you said, you know, you need those opportunities. And you had 7 home runs, 29 RBIs, 350 batting average, slight flex. But, you know, we're not gonna do too crazy about it. But it was amazing, in all seriousness. It was a great season for you to start off in South Bend. For you, and a lot of people have kind of mentioned this, what was the difference? You know, you obviously going from South Bend to Tennessee to Iowa, you know, a lot of people say the difference is just the mechanics and how pitchers are pitching to you. For you, what was the main difference in what you're seeing and how you're able to still kind of contain the same amount of stats that you normally produce on all three levels?
So I've done the exact opposite of what I did last year. Like I said, I got way too mechanical and got my own way instead of trusting the swing that I had that day and the work I put in and just reacting to the pitcher. So, that is the biggest adjustment, is reacting how people pitch to you at each level. You know, South Bend, I felt pretty comfortable there. It almost felt like college again, where, you know, you're going to get fastballs early in the count for the most part, and then pitchers try to put you away with an off-speed pitch. So, you know, just understanding that plan, it helped me hit early in the year, and then got to Tennessee, and guys come right after you with whatever their favorite pitch is. So it's not necessarily always fastballs early and breaking balls late. You know, if they like their slider, they'll throw it early and try to get you out with it. And a lot of them have good fastballs too. So if they need to get you off the slider, they'll throw a hard fastball up and in or something like that. So had to make that adjustment pretty quickly there and understand what teams are doing. And then AAA is, you know, there's a lot of former big leaguers up here. There's guys that can throw three pitches wherever they want them. You know, I have pretty good numbers on fastballs this year, so I don't get a ton of fastballs. Mm. And so just making that adjustment to understand how teams are going to pitch to me, how they'll try to get me out. Pitchers in a week, then I got to understand how they think they can get me out.
For sure. And, you know, Tennessee, we talked about that. You had a little bit more time down there with the Smokies. You had 53 games, 203 at-bats versus 100 at-bats in South Bend. 14 home runs doubled right there with double the at-bats in 51 RBIs, 301 batting average. Obviously, that's just a lot of numbers right there, but, you know, it still remains a constant. You're still doing what you're able to do. Obviously, going into Iowa, you're with Brennan now, you're with all these guys. It's a totally different atmosphere. 54 games, 195 at-bats, still killing it. You know, the RBIs are a little bit different, but 14 home runs, 297 batting average, 37 RBIs. For you right now, and I don't mean to put you on blast, but there's a lot of people that really just take you under their wing when you level up to these places. For you, whether it be South Bend, Tennessee, Iowa, who's really been there for you the most, whether it's a teammate, coach, whatever it may be?
That's a good question. I think, in Double-A, you know, I knew some of the guys just from spring training and from camps before, but yeah, there's guys like Strumpf and Weber in Double-A who had been there the whole year and I think finished in Double-A the year before, that are good guys. We're all infielders, obviously, so spend a lot of time together pregame and stuff like that. So I've had to talk to them about, you know, just hitting at that level. And I actually asked Brennan about Double-A last year when I spent like the last three or four games up here in Iowa just filling in when the big league Cubs had COVID and some guys had to move up. So actually I got to pick Brennan's brain a little bit and see what his thoughts on each individual level was. And then when I got here, you know, we had a couple guys with a ton of big league time. So Dixon Machado, who we traded, was a really experienced shortstop and was more than happy to talk to the younger guys and tell them how kind of the game works at higher levels. And, you know, John Hicks is another guy with a lot of big league time. He's an advanced hitter, and we're and through it, it really helped me.
100%. And, you know, I don't want to keep you too long, Matt. I know you got a very busy schedule. You got a lot going on. Before we get you out of here, I do want to ask you two things. One, we're going to plug your Instagram. We're going to plug everything. So really quick, I want to get that out of the way. Where can we find you, and where can we find everything Matt Mervis?
My Instagram is MervPapa. It's MervPapa. And my Twitter is MMervis12.
100%. Now, Matt, before we get you out of here, I know it's a very broad question. Obviously, there's going to be an obvious answer to it. But 2023, we're already done with 2022. We're recapping it right now. But when you look forward to spring training and everything else that goes into that, what are your expectations moving forward going into next year? Far more than just, I want to play for the Chicago Cubs. What do you want to work on the most?
You know, just continuing to improve on what I've done this year. I think there's still some work to be done in my swing and in my at-bats specifically, like, you know, swinging at the right pitches instead of swinging at everything, because I think I can hit everything, you know, limit it to swinging at pitches that I can drive and do damage on. So keep working on that. Obviously got some work to do on defense and keep improving my feet and my gloves. So there's plenty of work to be done this offseason.
Without a doubt, Matt, we appreciate you for coming on the show today, brother. Best of luck.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
All sports, all plays.